Welcome to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. Ooh. And tonight's special guest is from Martin Guitar, none other than Dick Boak. And we're going to be talking about an exhibit that's at the Met in New York City. The Instruments of C.F. Martin, tracing the birth of early American guitars. We're listening to Lawrence Juber playing the Martin guitar. And I'll have to tell Lawrence to tone it down a little bit and bring my good friend Dick Boak up in the microphones. Dick, how are you?
Hi, Dave.
All right. Well, you've been a busy man putting together this exhibit at the Met in New York City.
And well, I can't take all the credit here.
Well, I wasn't going to give you all the credit, but you've spearheaded a lot of it, and it's an interesting exhibit, at least in my eyes, in that it's not necessarily a whole retrospective of the history of Martin, but it really features early Martin guitars and some of the influences that C.F. Martin had. It's also, there's a book that's kind of was the impetus to getting this exhibit together, and I see you have it all spread-eagled right in front of you there.
Impetus is the key word here. Yeah, what happened was about 4.5 years ago, we had a group of people that were intensely interested in early Martin guitars. Very little research had been done about it, and we put together a conference called the Early Martin Guitar Summit. It was organized by a scholar and instrument collector in New Jersey named Peter Zago. And we gathered about 15 people and about 25 instruments from this time period. Each person kind of brought a couple.
This is like the 1830s?
1830 through 1855, roughly. And mostly Martin guitars, a couple of other brands that happened after Martin or were influenced by Martin or built by employees that left Martin. And what we did is measure them and tried to put them in sequential order to try and make sense about how the early guitars in the United States evolved. And after that first conference, the group really dived into the research. Each one of them writing an essay about their area of expertise with these instruments. And we held a second conference about 2 years after that. And the information, by the way, in the second conference, there was probably 45 guitars. And the information that was coming out was so compelling and told a story that a book was started, Peter Zago and Robert Shaw spearheading the book, with a group of the participants in the early Martin Guitar Conference that included David Gantz, Richard Johnston, David LaPlante, Arian Sheets and James Westbrook from London. And the book just took off. And actually, it was the book project that interested the Metropolitan in putting together the exhibition of Martin guitars at the Met.
Now, the Met has its own instrument collection, right?
Yeah, there's a whole department, and it's in the American wing of the Met. Pretty big area, and they have incredibly historic instruments. They have like the first piano ever made, and
really?
Things like I played it. And they have a number of Martin guitars in the exhibition from the early days. So they were very interested, and Jason Dobney, who is the curator for the Met for the musical instrument department, really took hold of the idea and worked with Peter Zago to put the exhibition together. So the exhibit includes 5 guitars from the Martin collection and about 17 other Martin instruments from private collections. And then supplementing that, there are a couple of other makers, Heinrich Schatz, who was one of Martin's partners, Bruno and Schmidt and Mall, and Ashbourne Guitars were kind of a competitor of Martin's.
Were they out in New York as well?
Actually, Connecticut, and fairly short-lived, but he was a major industrial manufacturer and really pumped the guitars out in a much different way than Martin did. But the exhibit is really compelling, and what was gleaned from the exhibit was that Martin came to the United States having trained with Johann Stauffer in Vienna, and he had learned how to make the Viennese-style and the German style of musical instrument. Curlicue headstock fashioned after Stauffer, the same headstock that Fender copied for their electrics.
Right, that's right.
And the instruments were kind of figure eight, where the upper part was about the same size as the lower part, divided in the middle with a fairly tight waist. But they were very Viennese. And
they were parlor instruments, too. Yeah. They weren't big at all.
All the instruments of that time period were very small, hardly recognizable today. So the Viennese style of instrument making was carried on in Martin's first couple of years, but he had a number of distributors in New York City, one of which around 1835-36, name was John Cupa. They called him the Spaniard. He was from Spain. And immigrants from different countries, including Spain, had brought their instruments to the United States. And it's likely that Martin repaired Spanish instruments and also was spurred by John Cupa to make some Spanish instruments for the people that wanted them. The Spanish guitar was much different. It had a tie bridge instead of a pin bridge. It had a different shape, a different headstock. It had a Spanish foot, which was totally different than Martin's dovetail joints. So what Martin did was combine the better parts of the Spanish guitar with the Viennese instrument. And in the process, the bracing changed. The bracing for all these instruments was called fan bracing. And the fan caused a problem for Martin because...
This is the bracing underneath the top, right?
Right. You've got to strengthen the top so that the
But it still has to vibrate.
Right. So with Martin's pin bridge, when he drilled the holes through, he would run into the braces, and this was a problem. So he tipped the fan bracing and extended them into an X shape.
Oh, right.
And the X bracing was first done by Martin in 1843, and now virtually every single guitar made, acoustic guitar, that is, made on the planet, utilizes Martin's invented X bracing from
that
time.
Did the X bracing help out with the loudness?
Well, what did
that come in not until the next century, the importance of being a louder instrument?
Well, it certainly helped when steel strings came in,
right,
with Hawaiian guitars and mandolins.
But that's not until the 1900s.
1920, really.
Okay, that's what I thought.
The steel strings came in. But the X-brace provided strength for the top without adding a lot of wood. Less wood, in fact, and distributing all the stress of the guitar onto the shoulders of the instrument instead of collapsing the sound hole. It was really a very ingenious pattern, and it sounded really good. And in fact, the guitars sounded better than any instruments made in the world. So this was the beginning of C.F. Martin, and that tradition of craftsmanship, fine materials, and tone set the stage for all the Martin guitars that followed. But the really interesting thing is that all of the ingredients of the guitar as we know it emerged in about a 15 to 20 year period.
Really?
From 1833 to 1863, 1867. 1867 is when the company was actually founded by a three-way partnership between C.F. Martin, C.F. Martin Jr., and C.F. Martin Jr.'s cousin, C.F. Hartman. So by that time, the bracing, all of the shapes and sizes, the styling, the ornamentation, even the nomenclature had developed. And the only thing that changed, really, after that point is the size. The size started to increase in size, mostly because of the loudness of the banjo.
Right. They had to compete with that. Right.
Yeah, and the guitar had to grow, really, to compete with that instrument, as well as being on stage, as people started to use instruments on stage, like you.
That's why I got my Martins. That's right. Well, that's interesting. So he refined this whole stuff within a 20-year period or so. How many guitars were they making per year back then using this new technology?
Well,
how did he?
I mean, it started slowly, but by the time Martin moved to Nazareth in 1839, with a very small crew that included his son and his cousin and a couple of other workers, probably, six or seven workers, they were making about 300 instruments a year, which is...
That's a lot.
Remarkable. It's remarkable. And they were shipping them by stagecoach to Philadelphia, Boston, New York primarily, and... The guitars were the ambassadors. They sounded great. They were backed by Martin's warranty, which
that was pretty unique for back then too, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Well, he believed in his instruments, and he'd fix them up for free for people, and that set the stage for our limited, what we call our limited lifetime warranty. That means if you drop it down the stairs, that's your problem. but we still repair instruments under warranty. You know, if it's some type of defect.
I have benefited from that. In fact, my Godfrey's Martin is back in my hands, and it is an incredibly loud instrument. I've been playing it. I got it back from the factory last month, and I have to control my playing now because it is so loud. I have to learn how to play quiet, which is not my style.
Well, you know, you and I go back to the very beginning of Godfrey Daniels, and, it's great to be your friend and have involvement with Godfrey's over the years. It's a fantastic place.
Yes, and I have to say that Martin supports Godfrey's yearly, and it's marvelous. You have the late 1930s Clapton guitar. Well, it's the one he kind of broke through in the Unplugged series. Why is that part of the series? Part of the exhibit.
You know, the Met had Ringo Starr's gold drum in the exhibit for the past couple of years, and more than any artifact in the entire museum, people came to see Ringo's drum. So I think having something that is a very significant part of popular American culture, musical culture, is really important to the exhibit to bring people in. And Clapton's guitar is very significant because it spurred a resurgence in popularity of acoustic music.
That's what I was thinking. But that was a recognizable trend when he went unplugged?
Well, before that, rock bands would get up on stage with their electric guitars, turn it up to 16, and play the whole concert with electrics. But after Clapton performed Unplugged, it was expected of almost every band that they get up and in the middle of the show get their acoustic guitars out and be pure with their pure acoustic sound. And piezoelectronic technology that is pickups for guitar really had advanced to the point where you could play Madison Square Garden with a pickup. So back to the exhibit here and the book. The book is called Inventing the American Guitar, The Pre-Civil War Innovations of C.F. Martin and His Contemporaries. And this is a companion book to the exhibition. The exhibition opened on January 14th, and it runs for an entire year. That's kind of unprecedented. Runs until December 7th. And it is a fascinating exhibit, and the rest of the musical instrument area is a wonderful thing to see as well. Not to mention the 17 buildings that have combined to make the largest and greatest museum in the world. So it's a tremendous honor for Martin to be recognized by the Met and to have this exhibit, and we're just so thrilled.
I'm going to give you some of the information on the exhibit here, but we're going to pause briefly for a PSA. Dick Boak, Martin Guitars, in for Lehigh Valley Arts Salon.
For program support, we thank Jenny Squali, 102 East 4th Street, Bethlehem, serving homemade Malaysian cuisine infused with spices and combined with other ingredients to reflect the various cultures in Malaysia. All food is made fresh. For hours, daily specials, and more information, 610-758-8088 or jennysquali.com.
Once again, we're in the studio here at WDIY, Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. My name's Dave Fry and my good friend Dick Boak across the way here. We're talking about the Met's Early American Guitars, the Instruments of C.F. Martin exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and it runs through December 7th. Here's some of the information. You can go to www.metmuseum.org, or you can call them at 212-537-7710. Once again, www.metmuseum.org. They have a nice spread on the exhibit there, too. Tickets are $25 adults, seniors, $17, and students, $12. Members and children under 12, if you're accompanied by an adult, you get in for free. And the exhibit runs Friday and Saturday, 10 to 9, Sunday through Thursday, 10 to 5:30. And they're also doing some educational programs as well. One is called How Did They Do That?
Yeah, it's actually organized by Betsy Gibbons and a good friend of mine named Dan Krugman, who is a budding luthier and going to demonstrate guitar-making techniques.
So let's talk a little bit about the contemporary guitars. So the contemporary of C.F. Martin at the time. So there were Spanish guitars, there were Austro-German guitars.
Yeah, and Italian guitars.
How were people playing these instruments? Like I said, they were parlor size. Were they mostly for, you know, in-house type of things, or did they actually do concerts with them?
Well, they mostly did. The reason they're called parlor guitars is because they were primarily played by women.
Right.
Women occupied about 80% of the market. As a matter of fact, a number of Martin's models were referred to as women's models. And women would entertain their guests in the parlor of their homes. And the instruments were small and light and comfortable to play for women.
What about the strings?
Strings were gut strings, and gut was actually, people think it's cat gut, but it actually was made from the intestines of sheep and goats, which is a pleasant thought, isn't it? But the gut strings have a texture to them that's hard to describe. It's a very, very pleasing tone.
Is that why classical players, they can get a grip with that kind of...
These days, the classical guitars are strung with nylon, which is very smooth and even and has very little texture to it.
Oh, really? Okay.
But the gut strings have a fibrous quality to them and really have a bite and a punch that's very pleasing. So all the guitars through around 1900, 1910 were strung with real gut and... very light tension on the top. We were talking about steel strings. When steel strings came in with the Italian immigration and the mandolins and subsequently the Hawaiian guitar players that played with a slide, the steel strings really lent themselves to the X-braced Martin guitar design because the X-bracing was strong enough to support the steel strings, but it really had a tone. It just came alive. So our reputation was certainly enhanced. And within a period of about 15 years, almost all the Martin models were then available either way, gut or steel.
Huh. I'm also curious, being a mandolin player, I know there was a tremendous, after World War I, mandolins and banjos really ruled the roost in a lot of different ways. Mandolin orchestras, and of course, the rhythm instrument of choice was the banjo because it was loud enough.
Yeah.
But it's really after World War I that the guitar kind of rose in prominence.
Well, a couple of things happened. Right around 1930, the banjo players started to demand more notes out of the neck. Mm-hmm. They were used to playing the plectrum banjo all the way up to the 20th or 22nd frets. And as banjo began to wane in popularity, a lot of the banjo players were being called upon to play guitar. And they started requesting of Martin more access up the neck, more frets. And a very famous banjo player named Perry Bechtel asked for a 15-fret guitar. He was probably the best banjo player in the United States from Atlanta, Georgia. And he came to visit Martin, and Martin laid it out on paper, and they said, well, we can give you 14 frets. So the guitar changed in 1930. They squared off the shoulders of the guitar, added two more frets access, which was important because that was right above the octave. And within about 5 years, almost all the Martin models were offered both ways, once again, 12 fret or 14 fret.
Well, Dick, it's been a pleasure having you here. We have to move on to other things. I really appreciate your stopping by. We got to do this again.
You bet. Well, I love WDIY, and I love coming to see you, and thanks for having me.
All right. Once again, tell us about the exhibit.
The exhibit is early American guitars, the instruments of C.F. Martin at the Metropolitan Museum of Art from now until the end of the year, December 7th. And it really is worth going in to see the exhibit. The companion book is called Inventing the American Guitar, The Pre-Civil War Innovations of C.F. Martin and His Contemporaries by Peter Zago and Robert Shaw.
And the museum up at the factory is fabulous as well.
Yeah, don't miss that.
That is great. Thanks, Dick Boak, sitting in here, Lehigh Valley Arts Salon. Thanks so much. Dick, safe travels out there. He's going on a cruise on Thursday.
It's all work.
All right. Thanks, Dick Boak. You are listening to WDIY. Allentown, Lehigh Valley Arts Salon.